Big question in business, which cuts will be the cuts that take place this fiscal year?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning, I'm Steve Chiotakis. In just a few hours, the White House unveils its budget for the coming fiscal year, including more than $1 trillion in cuts. There are some tax hikes as well. And already the critics are coming forward. Marketplace's Eve Troeh is with us live here in our Los Angeles studio with more. Morning, Eve.
Hi, Steve.
So this $1+ trillion, where's that coming from?
Well, first off, that's the amount saved over 10 years. It's mostly going to come from budget cuts and, to a lesser extent, tax code changes. The White House wants to freeze all domestic spending that's not related to security issues for 5 years. But that doesn't necessarily mean no new spending. The president is taking what some people call a winners and losers approach. So if you cut subsidies for oil, for example, you can spend that money on new energy research. I talked to Diane Lim Rogers. She's chief economist at the Concord Coalition. She says the White House calls this approach investment, but not everyone agrees.
A lot of these programs are something else. They're assistance programs, so they have public goods benefits, but they aren't necessarily going to grow the economy.
And Republicans say freezing spending at current levels isn't sustainable anyway. They say deeper spending cuts are needed.
All right. So who's going to feel the brunt of the cuts already in this budget?
Well, low-income families, for one. A program that helps pay heating bills is on the chopping block, and Pell Grants for higher education. On the other hand, the wealthiest families would lose money, too. The budget reduces their tax deductions for things like charitable donations and mortgage interest.
All right. Marketplace's Eve Troeh here in Los Angeles. Eve, thanks.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. The Egyptian Stock Exchange was supposed to be open today, but it's probably going to be another week before trading gets underway there again. The country's economy is in shambles after weeks of protests against President Hosni Mubarak, who resigned on Friday. And if that weren't bad enough, Egyptians now have to spend some money to make a democracy. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports it ain't cheap.
Is it right to spend millions of dollars on an election in a poor country desperate for resources?
It's a cost that I think is justified, but it does give one pangs, you know, because you look around and see all the other needs that are unmet.
That's John Stremla with the Carter Center. He oversees efforts to promote democracy around the world. He says elections lay the foundation for a stable democracy, and stability paves the way for international donors to make investments.
In Egypt, we're going to go through some uncharted waters because they've not had a credible open election in memory. And so they're going to have to build some of the procedures and institutions, and that will be costly and will take time.
How costly? He says international donors could be looking at election costs in Egypt of about $10 per voter. Comparatively, that's actually a bargain. Stremla says elections here in the U.S. cost about $30 per voter. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Global shares are mixed right now. Japan's Nikkei did gain a little ground today, despite word that China officially replaced Japan as the world's second biggest economy in 2010. General Electric is buying the oil well support unit of Britain's John Wood Group. The deal's worth about $3 billion. We'll get Marriott Hotel earnings later today. Wall Street, the Dow added 43 points on Friday, a third of a percent, to end the week at 12,273. Markets, the S&P and NASDAQ and Dow, were all up about a percent and a half last week.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, providing investment, insurance, and retirement solutions since 1896. Allianzusa.com. And by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com.
Well, Borders Books and Music could be filing for bankruptcy as early as today. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. The retailer's troubles come partly from its failure to keep up with technology. And with a new machine that prints and binds e-books, it looks like things could get a little tougher for the big booksellers. Tracy Samuelson reports.
When you print books for a living, there's one saying that never gets old.
Hot off the press.
That's Dane Neller, CEO of a company called On Demand Books. We're standing in an independent bookstore in New York next to a printer that On Demand has developed. The Espresso book machine is a bit bigger than a bathtub. It can print, trim, and bind a book in about the time it takes the cafe here to prepare your espresso.
You can buy in copyright books, public domain books, or if you had your own book, we can make it for you.
McNally Jackson Books recently installed the printer, the first of its kind in New York City, and charges between $10 and $15 for the books it prints. The machine has access to over 4 million titles, including the Google Books catalog. Sarah McNally is the store's owner. She hopes the wider selection will help her compete against big chains and Amazon.
We then become closer and closer to an infinite bookstore.
The printer turns ebook technology on its head, using digital files to print old-school, hard-copy books. Despite all the hype around ebooks, that's what most consumers still want, something they can hold with pages they can flip. Michael Norris is an analyst with Simba Information, a marketing research firm.
There are at least 5 or 6 print book buyers for every 1 ebook buyer.
On Demand will soon begin leasing its printers. Till now, it's sold more than 20 in the U.S. for just under $100,000 apiece, an investment that takes stores around 2 years to recoup. McNally says profit margins on books she prints will be 8 to 16% higher than books off the shelf. Still, the machine is a bit of a financial unknown.
But I think what it does represent is that this bookstore is a bookstore of the future, and it's finding new business models and remaining relevant to its community as the world around it changes.
In other words, innovation has its own value. In New York, I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
And finally, a few years back, I was cleaning my parents' garage and found what I thought was a collector's item. It was a big beige 8-track tape of Supertramp's Breakfast in America. I thought about selling it on eBay, but I could have sent it to Bucks Burnett, who's opening this 8-track museum today in Dallas. The 8-track was, after all, the first music distribution system made for cars. Portable music, right? Oh, and by the way, I found that Supertramp 8-track, or one just like it anyway, selling on eBay for $1.75. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles, on Twitter at Radio Chio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
It's actually expensive to work here illegally, which is why a lot of people crossing the border choose to follow the rules.
It's better for us to go legally. If we have papers, we can return and spend time with our families. So we prefer to go and then come back.
I'm Kai Rizdal, the high-cost life of a legal worker. Next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.